Ya shuran nan brajadanan janna Yamuna tiramana jahani Yamuna tiramana jahani Jai Radha Madhava Vrindavihari Jai Radha Madhava Vrindavihari Gopijana Balava Girivardhani Gopijana Balava Girivardhani Yashoda nanana braja jananjana Yashoda nanana braja jananjana Yamuna tiravana jahani Yamuna tiravana jahani Jai Radha Madhava Vrindavihari Jai Radha Madhava Vrindavihari Jai Radha Madhava Vrindavihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Brihuraja Gacharya Asto Tarasata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jaya Mishnupad Paramahamsa Brihuraja Gacharya Asto Tarasata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Jai ISKCON DDT Founded Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Shri Shri Kishori Ki Jai Shri Jagannath Shri Baladev Shri Mati Subhadra Ki Jai Shri Shri Goni Chai Ki Jai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the Sama devotees All glories to the Sama devotees All glories to the Sama devotees. All glories, all glories. Shri Shri Guru and Garanga Shira Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namo Om Vishnu Guraya Krishna Mastana Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vinanta Swamini Tadamini Namaste Shazam Devam Gauravani Chani Nenu Sesha Shimpasta Taza. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So it's described that the Srimad Bhagavatam, like Lord Krishna, is ever fresh. So this morning it's going to be ever fresh for all of us, including myself, because I misread whatever was on my phone, which told me you're on text 50, but here we're on text 52. So it's going to be a brand new, fresh experience for all of us this morning. So thank you, Lord, for allowing me to be spontaneous today. If anybody wants to look at some interesting notes, you're welcome to take a look at them. Maybe I'll pull something from there. Text 50 is like very precise, very specific, precise purport. So we'll see what 52 holds for us. So, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text 52. Did I say Om Namo yet? Okay, all right, so Ani Madhya Mahima Bir jadyabir vibhutibhi chaturvisha tibhistatvai padita mahat adhibhi animadya mahimabir ayadyabir vibhutibhi Chaturvim Shatibhistatvai Padita Mahat Adhibi Animadya Mahimabhir Ayadya Bhirvibhuttibhi Chaturvim Shatibhistatvai Paditam had adhibi. Vaishnavis. Means anima adyai, headed by anima, mahima bhi, by opulences, aja adya bhi, headed by aja, vibhuti bhi, by potencies, chatur vimshati bhi, 24 in number, tatvai, by elements for the creation of the material world. Paradita, all the Vishnumurtis were surrounded. Mahat Adibi, headed by the Mahatattva. Translation. All the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences, headed by Anima City, by the mystic potencies headed by Aja, and by the 24 elements for the creation of the material world headed by Mahatattva. Purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda. In this verse, the word Mahimābhī means Aishvarya or opulence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can do whatever He likes. That is His Aishvarya. No one can command him, but he can command everyone. Shad Aishvarya Purnam. The Lord is full in six opulences. The yoga siddhis, the perfections of yoga, such as the ability to become smaller than the smallest, anima siddhi, or bigger than the biggest, mahima siddhi, are present in Lord Vishnu. Shad Aishwarya Purno Yaiha Bhagavan. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 1.3. The word Aja means Maya or mystic power. Everything mysterious is in full existence in Vishnu. The 24 elements mentioned are the five working senses, Pancha Karmendriya, the five senses for obtaining knowledge, Pancha Gyanendriya, the five gross material elements, Pancha Mahabhuta, the five sense objects, Pancha Tanmatra, the mind, Manas, the false ego, Ahankara, the Mahatattva, and material nature, Prakriti. All 24 of these elements are employed for the manifestation of this material world. The Mahatattva is divided into different subtle categories, but originally it is called the Mahatattva. Om Jnana Tami Andasha Janan Anjana Shalakaya Chakshu Om Minitam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Murukam Padamayam Dadati Svapanantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garada Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I'll borrow from my notes. Thank you for allowing me to come to Chicago again. Everything after this is ad lib. But it is a pleasure to be here. I have to also comment, I'm sure you also appreciate it, but sometimes when you come from another place, you particularly appreciate, but the deities here, especially today, are exquisitely beautiful. So whoever dressed them, special kudos to you. Oh, they look particularly gorgeous. Is this a new outfit from Ram Naomi or just specially decorated? Okay, this is very, very beautiful. Very beautiful. So here in this section, we know, just brief recap, you've been studying for some time. So Lord Brahma stole the cows and the cowherd boys, hid them away for a year, which a moment of his time, came back, was completely bewildered because they're all there still. So he's used his mystic power to do something amazing. I mean, just like these days, you know, once in a while somebody might, like there's some marital dispute and they kidnap their child or something, one, and they try to hide him for a short period of time. Or sometimes evil people these days, they might kidnap somebody. Some woman and her guide were just recently kidnapped in some place in the Afghanistan area or something like that. And they had to pay a big ransom to get them back. And so, you know, kidnapping. You might have enough power to kidnap one person, two persons. But just imagine if you had enough power to kidnap a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of animals and turn yourself into those people and those animals and live in such a way for a whole year that nobody knows it's not them. That's kind of way beyond any power we might have to, you know, we have our little drop. We could misuse our kidnapping potency. And Lord Brahma, with his great mystic potency compared to us, could actually steal away the cowherd boys and the calves and put them into some kind of mystic slumber for a whole year. Again, a moment of his time, but a year of our time. That's pretty powerful. But then he comes back and he sees it and he's bewildered. He's completely bewildered because they're there. So how can they be there? They can't be there. And how can they be? But they are there. And so he's like the biggest brain in the universe. And he thinks he understands everything. He knows how it works. And probably in the back of his mind, he's starting to get really, really nervous because this was all a test to see, who is this Krishna? So he's probably starting to think, uh-oh, I might have crossed the line here. And then, as described a few verses before, these beautiful, all the cows and the cowherd boys turn into these beautiful Vishnu forms with their beautiful smiling faces, described as like the moon, and with the reddish eyes, and not only there, but it doesn't show this so much in the paintings we have, but here it's described, they're surrounded by these different opulences, by so many devotees, and and they're looking at them with, it's described, their reddish eyes, which is inspiring all of these devotees. And here are more descriptions of these potencies that are there with the Vishnu forms. So all of this, it's interesting, all of this was meant to simultaneously kind of chastise Lord Brahma, but more importantly to teach him, and through him to teach us. And at the end, I read a couple of verses ahead, Lord Brahma just does what I was thinking we're advised often to do when we find ourselves in times of trouble or some particularly difficult challenge, or sometimes bewilderment or astonishment or just lethargy or whatever. What does Brahma do? At the final moment, he just says, when he's so confused, what's he do? The Vishnus go away, and then he sees in front of him Krishna, and he just falls at his feet, described with all four of his heads, then touches the Lord's lotus feet and offers his respects. And Prabhupada comments like this many times in different places about how, you know, devotees, whatever situation we're in, we should always be offering our respects to Krishna. And sometimes, you know, we don't know what to say, we don't know what to do, we don't know how to respond. And those are the moments we should just understand our smallness and try to remember Krishna's bigness, or I like to describe the mystic power, she can become very, very small, and it's kind of like us, you become very, very big, that's Krishna. Just remember that and offer our respects to the Lord and ask him for his shelter. So this is ultimately what Lord Brahma does. And it's a deep and interesting story in many ways. One that we know, we've learned through the pages of the Bhagavatam how important Brahma is. He's the creator. The whole descriptions in earlier cantos about how he's created everything. We know for us particularly he's the founder, acharya of our sampradaya. And so many times when the earth planet was disturbed, who did she go to for help? She went to Lord Brahma first, and then all the demigods went to Lord Brahma, and then he was the one that said, okay, just wait here, I'll talk to the Lord. So Lord Brahma is not an ordinary, you know, mayor of Chicago or president of the United States or, you know, head of the local police department or something like that. He's like the supremely powerful jiva within this universe. He's the one that the demigods go to when they need to ask special mercy from Krishna. But even he is minimized and at the same time bewildered by understanding Krishna's potency. But through the whole thing, at near the end, when he becomes so bewildered, that Krishna appears with a little bit of food in his hand. And he's just looking at him with this sweet smile. And then Brahma realizes he's completely bewildered by the whole thing, and he offers his prayers. So somehow or other, we're very fortunate. It's described so many places in the Shastra that we cannot understand Krishna through our limited intelligence and our limited senses and minds, but that he reveals himself. So just like in this pastime, he revealed himself to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma took shelter of him. And he remembered, of course, Krishna remembers all of the service that's described, right? For whatever little step we take towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards us, etc. So Krishna's remembering all the service that Lord Brahma has done for him. And at the same time, because he's now committed this foolish mistake, ultimately Leela, but he's committed this foolish mistake. So Krishna's correcting him and simultaneously showing his mercy on him. So this is a particularly important insight in the Vaishnava tradition. Is there in other traditions to one extent or the other? I don't know them so well. But this concept, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, that he's the the well-wisher, the best friend of every living entity. And just like we know, if we have a best friend or some best friends, if we make mistakes, those friends, usually they kind of sit by and watch for a little while, hoping you're going to get it together. And then at some point they might intervene and say, hey, as your friend, I think you're a little off here, and let's try to work on this. Not in the mood of, okay, you made a mistake and it's time to punish you, or you made a mistake and we're going to shun you, or you made a mistake so you're not my friend anymore, I don't love you anymore, I don't care about you, but because I care about you, I want to try to help you rectify. You're kind of like in some trouble here. And we know the nature of this material, is we all get in trouble from time to time. We make mistakes. It's our nature. We have imperfect senses. We tend to be illusioned. We cheat sometimes. And we make mistakes. So this whole world, from the viewpoint of the Vaishnava, is actually Krishna's energy and his desire. It describes in the third chapter, ninth verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that this entire material universe was created for two purposes. One is to fulfill the desires of the living entities, because we wanted it. Sometimes I wonder, how is it you wanted, I was reading something the other day, I was speaking to some devotee scientists, or reading something about how many bacteria there are in the world. And for me, it's unfathomable how you could ever want to be a bacteria. But according to the Shastra, there's Atma everywhere. So there must be some kind of sense gratification even there. Something is there. It's like, you know, the dogs have their particular type of body, and the birds and the bears and the trees and everything else. So somehow, the jiva, we've got these desires to try to enjoy different experiences in the material world. So it's just like a parent, you know, like a child might see, like, whatever, the Illinois State Fair, right? They see an ad on a billboard or on television or something, say, mommy, mommy, I won't go to the State Fair. So then you go to the State Fair, okay, oh, I want some cotton candy, no, I want to ride this ride, and I want to ride the ride that goes like this, and let's go look at the pigs, and let's do this, and let's do that. And then at the end of the day, I remember my mother used to take me to the Michigan State Fair, and within a few hours, I was sick to my stomach on cotton candy and my head going around all the rides. Okay, let's go home now. Can we please go home now? I thought this was going to be fun, but this isn't any fun. So, you know, the mother, the father, the elder family members, you know, sometimes they take their children to the circus or to the state fair for some limited gratification. Krishna, as the supreme parent, he creates a whole universe for us. I mean, how many rides are there here? I was speaking with a man. I was in town for this religion communicators conference last night. And I was speaking with a friend who works for the National Council of Churches. And in August, he's going to India. He's going to ride with a group of motorcyclists to Kashmir. Right? And he said at one point they go over a peak. It's 18,000 feet high. And I was thinking, you have any idea what you're getting into? He's never been to India before. He lands in Delhi, and they take motorcycles all the way up into Kashmir. And I was telling him, you know, the secrets of the trade, grapefruit seed extract, and, you know, a few things like that. And then at one point he told me, he said, yeah, I've got two challenges. I can't remember what one was, but the second one was, I'm afraid of heights. I thought, are you nuts? I mean, I've never been on those trips. Tirupati I've been a few times, and that's, you know, pretty modernized now. There's guardrails, and it's one-way road, but, you know, years ago it wasn't. But some of these sites in the Himalayas, it's gravel, and there's no guardrail, and it's one lane wide. And if you come across another car, you know, you inch by, and I've seen some videos on YouTube or something years ago, like the road's right there. And sometimes it's like a bus with double wheels and one wheel's over the side. And those things fall over all the time. But anyways, you know, and then he was telling me, yeah, well, I'll be careful because I got four kids. I was thinking, you got four kids? What are you doing this for? Man, he's going. So I just offered him a little advice I can. So for some people, that's like, wow, that's exciting. I'm going to go to the Himalayas. And then he told me, yeah, he said there's two places where there's like chain bridges. He'll go across some big gorge, and he said there's wooden planks. I thought, your motorcycle? I mean, I get nervous going across bridges, like, you know, with a car, with, you know, a boat. A plank bridge. But there's some excitement there. I mean, he's paying a lot of money. He's going away for 2 weeks to do this exciting trip. And Krishna, please protect him. He's a nice guy. but, you know, so the whole universe is like that, right? A Brahma Bhuvana Loka, from the topmost place down to the lowest. You know, we have our free will, and we can go to these different places if we want to. And just like you can go to the state fair, and maybe there's 10, 20, 30, whatever rides you can go on. Oh, I know, I saw, we visited an NBC4 TV studio, and one of the, we're watching on the news, and there's a Star Wars convention in town. So all these people dress up like, you know, robots and hairy creatures and things like that. And they really want to be those creatures. You know, they spend a lot of money in these costumes and go to these conventions with other people that think the same way and imagine what it would be like to be a creature on such and such a planet. It's like, yeah, you can go there. No problem. You can go there. You have to, you know, earn some credits. But Krishna is so kind. Again, just like the mother that allows the child, okay, you want to do this, okay, you want to do that, that's fine, you can do that. But ultimately, creates this whole big, crazy playground for us. And of course, all of us remember when you're a child, isn't it? And the teachers let you out of the playground, right? And everything seems like fun until you get a little disturbed, and then you take the ball and you throw it against another kid's head, right? What happens? Teacher comes right over, grabs you by the wrist, and depending on what era you grew up in, either gently reminds you this is not the nice way to be a good little boy, or at least I remember one of the schools I went to, and probably maybe some of you did too, you know, like I remember the child was particularly bad, they make them stand on a table in the lunchroom in the middle, and sometimes like hold their hands up, or, you know, like anyone to Catholic school, I didn't go, but I've heard, you know, they would sometimes hit kids with a ruler on their knuckles and all that stuff. So Krishna also has those systems. When we get a little carried away and cause harm to others, and as we see, this world is full of people harming each other, then you got to go down again, and we suffer different punishments. But just like ultimately, ideally, with the teacher, why do they chastise the child? Because the child needs to understand you can't do that to your brother or your sister or your schoolmate. Or to that little, you know, snake you found outside in the grass. You know, the snakes aren't meant for finding and, you know, lighting them on fire or terrible things that little kids do. You know, that's bad stuff. So then there's reactions for that. So there's this whole playground, and the souls go up and down and up and down and up and down. And there's no hope, actually, because people get so covered over by their different material desires. And then the reactions to those desires. But by the mercy of Krishna, because he is so kind, he comes again and again and again. Yada yada hi dharma sha glani bhaviti bharata. Again, I was at this convention the last few days, and I always find it impressive because, oh, many reasons, but one, just to interact, it's mostly people from Abrahamic traditions. There was one guy there with the Vedanta Society, but it's about 150 people, a lot of people from a group called the American Church Press, I think, ACP. And it's interesting to interact with people from different religious traditions and see, you know, how God is interacting in their lives and how they're also trying to serve God. And you know, they have different emphasis. And a lot of times we can learn from these other people because sometimes we may focus on a certain thing and we forget other things. And sometimes certainly they focus on certain things and they forget other things. Generally, we're pretty good at the transcendent part. We're not so good at the living in the world part. In fact, I'll just mention there was one man spoke yesterday. He was an African-American man with a church in South Chicago. Can't remember the name of the city. Anyway, he told this amazing story about how he felt it was called back and all the difficulties he had moving into this very difficult neighborhood. But he was sharing his realization that he said, I thought I went there to teach people. Then I realized actually I came here because God wanted to teach me some things. And then he said, and I realized I wasn't going there to minister to people, I wasn't going to preach to people, I wasn't going to change people, but I actually was meant to go and live there in that deeper sense of being with the people and actually trying to bring, as he would say, you know, bring Christ, we would say bring Krishna into keeping him in my life, bringing him into my life and bringing him into the other people. And like one little short story he shared, he'd grown up in this neighborhood and then he went to college, got a degree, became a minister, and was at some other church and got this inspiration to go back. But then he was also describing how he had two daughters. He was quoting some biblical verse about, you know, God says, it's too much to get into the detail, but something about God said, and raise your daughters and, you know, give them to good boys and let them, you know, have children and expand the, you know, the people, kind of like the Bhagavatam has verses like that. And he was saying that when he reached some point, he was really agonized because his verse said, and marry your daughters. And he was thinking, you know, I'm here, that's okay. I'm doing what I can, that's okay. But marry my daughters to guys in this neighborhood, I don't think I can do that. And he said once his wife said, what do you think, you know, what's God telling me here? She said, you're really stupid. He told everybody this. He was thinking, well, thanks for the support. He said, why do you say I'm really stupid? She said, because you're from this town. I married you, you know. My father looked at you and saw what hope is there. What's the potential in your heart? So he was just describing about, you know, from their tradition, from their inspiration, what's being explained here, and what's behind practically every verse in the Bhagavatam, is how we should see Krishna present. So he was seeing it, that God had led him to this particular place, which is a very difficult place, but he really needs to live there and be with the people. And he does some pretty amazing things. They talked about, he was interesting. There's a bunch of, he was quoting this series of verses about you should go there and plant gardens. And this is like in a really bad part of Chicago. But their church had worked with the neighbors to plant gardens, so people were growing their own food now. And then he said there was no grocery stores there. So the church got together and they went out and bought food at like Trader Joe's. I remember he specifically said Trader Joe's. Not Safeway, but Trader Joe's. You know, organic, healthy, whatever. And then they bring him back and they have like a grocery store in the basement. He was saying so that the parishioners didn't wait in line for a handout, but themselves could come and buy things with their own money. And then he started working with the neighborhood, and they brought a Whole Foods into that neighborhood. But they, you know, they made conditions that 99 out of 10 people have to be from this neighborhood, your employees. And you got to do this, and you got to do this, and you got to do this. So he was commenting about how living in the world as a Christian. So, you know, in a similar way, the Bhagavatam is also explaining to us, because these are, you know, many people read this and say, oh, this is some kind of mystical story, but we really have faith. No, Brahma is actually a real person. And this is acting on a much higher plane in the universe. But the same principles are there, that Krishna has created this big, 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 big playground for us, and we're going up and down and up and down and up and down. And the reason that we're here is because of our desires. That was explained in a couple of verses ago, the one I was going to speak on, that it's because of the desire of the living entity that we're here, and it's because of our impure desires that we run into so many trouble, so many problems. And if we understand that, then as Vaishnavas, it also means we have to be more responsible people. I don't know, like, you know, sometimes it's analyzed, the word responsible means respond able. You know, a lot of times people, especially these days, people get into some kind of like victim mentality. Of, well, what can I do? You know, there's the story of the two men whose father was a terrible criminal personality. And the one son became a great doctor, and the other son became a criminal. So someone was researching, went back and asked the one son in prison, how is it you ended up here? You know, like in prison for life or something. He said, here's, look at my history. My father was abusive, you know, he demeaned us, he hit us, he did so many terrible things, horrible example. What do you expect? What could I do? How could I turn out any differently? And then they went to the other son who was like a doctor and said, how is it possible that you turned out that? He said, what other choice did I have? My father abused me. He was a terrible person. He was mean to me. What choice did I have but to try to do something positive in my life? So, you know, responsible. So this is a big part of kind of the message of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. We're in this described phantasmagoria. We're caught up with so many different material desires and different conditioning and so many obstacles. You know, we all have so many obstacles and we have so many shortcomings and so many challenges in life. You know, economic challenges and family problems and physical problems and sometimes emotional problems and neighborhood problems and, you know, so many things in there. Car breaking down problems, right? Just mean car breaking down problems. And I went to St. Louis and borrowed their car and it worked fine until the day they loaned it to me. And it broke down on the highway. I'd forgotten that. But there's so many challenges that come here. And you can't avoid those things because the thing that satisfies us is Krishna. So we've chosen to be in the place where there's no Krishna. It's like he's not there. He's there, but we can't see him. We've chosen go away, hide. It's like saying, I'm really, really thirsty, but I want to go to the water. Someone say, you're thirsty? Yeah, here, take some water. No, I don't want water. Like, I'm really unhappy with try God. Oh, I don't want God. You're really unhappy with surrender. Oh, I don't want to surrender. And you're really unhappy. Well, here, take shelter of the person who actually loves you, who actually cares about you, who's actually been in your heart for unlimited births, and is working behind the scenes, and behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. It's creating the scene. He is the scene, arranging everything just for our crazy desires, but yet he's reminding us these things can't satisfy us. And as Prabhupada says, the only thing that keeps us here, our desire and our causeless, amazing term, our causeless unwillingness to surrender. So somehow by Krishna's grace, we've got our foot in the door, and Prabhupada's grace and Guru's grace, Mahaprabhu's grace, we've got our foot in the door. So now we have to be careful to protect our own devotional creepers. It's very, very tender at this time, which means associating with devotees as best we possibly can. And it's described again a couple of verses ago. I read a few purports, and some of it particularly mentions about hearing and chanting being the most important of all yajnas, the most specifically says that the most important and powerful of all pious activities. So just like this morning, I was thinking, Acharya asked me, can you chant? And I was thinking, geez, I was up till 12:30, went to bed at 1 o'clock, didn't get up for Mangal Arati, I'm a little fuzzy, how can I chant? But then I thought, no, I should chant because it purifies me. I need to chant. So sometimes we chant because the deities look beautiful and we want to sing for them. And sometimes we chant because somebody tells us to chant. And sometimes we chant just because we know I need to chant. Of course, we always need to chant. But this is the special, again, the mercy of Krishna and Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya that we've been given this gift, this process, and we should try to take very careful care of it. And also, as we know, that, you know, when we chant, O Lord, our energy, Lord, please engage in your service, and when we're starting to think, Krishna, please help me awaken some love for you, then we also have to remember he's a person. Which also means the same way we have Krishna, please, can you do this, can you do this, can you do this? He's also asking, please, can you do this one thing? Two things, actually, yes. Can you please develop love for me? And can you please try to share this with as many people as possible according to your capacity? Those are really like his two desires. That wonderful story, Prabhupada was in Atlanta, had a meeting with the Sankirtan devotees, book distributors, and they asked him, they said, Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? Right? They were just waiting for Prabhupada to kind of, you know, slap them on the back, you know. You guys, that's what they're waiting for, you know. And Prabhupada said, when you love Krishna. So, of course, we know not at all to minimize book distribution. It is the most dear service to Prabhupada, and it is the preeminent means of reaching out and contacting people. But in a larger sense, everything we do, we should try to pray to Krishna, somehow let me be part of, be an instrument, part and parcel of your Sankirtan movement to try to get everyone a chance to come to you. And be careful that we keep balance in our own lives. I was talking with Nityananda Prabhu about this the other night. In fact, I went to Denver recently. I grew up in Denver. It was my first temple. I physically in Michigan, but went to Colorado Temple. And It was interesting for a lot of reasons. I hadn't been there about 10 years, but one thing really shocked me. On a positive side, the building was full of a lot of young people, you know, 20, 25-year-olds, not just young compared to me, but young. And I was thinking, this is great, because a lot of our temples you go to, there's not so many young people. And a lot, you know, nice mix of ethnic diversity there and all that. But then I thought, okay, the room's full of 25-year-olds, but when I was here, 1970, I left in 80, left in 93. When I was here 25 years ago, it was also full of 25-year-olds. And if I'd come 20 years ago, it was full of 25-year-olds, and 15 years ago, it was full of 25-year-olds, and 10-year-olds. So where are all those people? It was kind of like, really, wow, we're not doing such a good job. Because we should be attracting the young people at 25 and then help them integrate Krishna into their lives. The room should be full of 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 35-year-olds and 40. All the people that we came in contact with 25 years ago when they were young, they should now be really, you know, deeply connected to us and maybe initiated, a bunch of them and all that. So that worried me, bothered me, because I was thinking we were doing something wrong. Because we have to introduce people to Krishna consciousness. We also have to help them keep Krishna in the center of their lives. And we know spiritual life sometimes like this, right? People kind of, you know, you see somebody at the Sunday feast and you think, geez, wow, I haven't seen you in months. They will know, actually it's been 4 years, right? But I'm back. Isn't it? You see that all the time. They kind of get inspired for a while. And of course, sometimes people just physically, maybe they, you know, move to Montana or something like that. That happens sometimes too. But we should be, for ourselves, making sure we maintain the balance in our own lives. Like, you know, we got some young brahmacharis here, so you guys should make sure there's balance in your life so that you're feeling enlivened in your service. But in addition, and, you know, your bodies are taken care of, your mind's taken care of, your intelligence is taken care of, your need for social interaction is taken care of, your need for adventure, especially young men, adventure is taken care of. All those things can be done in connection with Krishna. You know, if we're married, people in grihastha life, we have to do those things and also make sure, you know, our family's centered on Krishna, our kids are getting some good foundation of Krishna consciousness, which is can be a real challenge. Because you try to give them too much, that doesn't work. You know, if you don't give them enough, that's a problem too. I mean, sometimes I've been to temples and seen it's really disturbing. You see a parent, and they bring their temple, their child, they tell them to come to the lecture and sit down and be quiet. I mean, I can, at 60-something, I can barely sit down and be quiet for 35 minutes. I got to move around And I'm an adult. If I want to get up and walk across the room, nobody's going to tell me I can't. But if I'm 7 years old, my mother tells me, sit. Sit means sit. Right? And not like that sometimes there's no coloring book. They're just sitting, exploding. And what does that do subtly? You know, as soon as you have the chance, as soon as you're big enough to say, no, I'm not going. Because I've experienced such a negative one. So in our own lives, we have to make sure that we're keeping things balanced. It's like they talk about, right, there's the comfort zone. There were a bunch of magazines there, and one of the Christian magazines they were passing on was saying, don't be a comfortable Christian, or something like that. Maybe it asked the question, didn't say, but don't be a comfortable Christian was the message. You know, you have this mercy from God, you have some insight on how God's working in the world. Don't take it and then just sit home with it. That's what the message of this minister was. You have to live it. So the same way we have to live it in our lives and become examples for people as best we can, because people are looking for examples. We have to live it ourselves and be finding that balance of taking care of our responsibilities in the world according to our different ashrams and situations, being responsible people, but also really endeavoring and sharing with others the need to respond to Krishna. So that's, you know, the message of this story, that Lord Brahma, Krishna's really stepping in. This is his special mercy. He like created this whole thing just to rectify him. So that's a message for us. It should deepen our faith that actually Krishna's arranging things for us. We just have to be open to them. I know I have a lot of friends right now, devotee friends, going through a lot of challenges. A very dear friend just had a stroke in Europe. And another friend's got a real family crisis. And another friend of mine, another part of the world, has got a big crisis with their teenage child. And, you know, it's like, as devotees, I know that in the early years, in my era, I mean, I remember there was one devotee who was 29. And he was so old. 29 was like, we used to make fun of him because he'd come back from book distribution, have to take a hot shower to relieve the pain of his elderly bones at 29. In other words, we were pretty young at 29. But now we've got 50-year-old, 60-year-old, 70-year-old people. Some of my godbrothers are 80 years old. 80 years old, that's like 80 years old. That's old, old. So we have all those different stratum now. But at each stage, the question is, what's Krishna teaching me? And I think that's the really important thing for us to always be asking. Just like Brahma, he's so bewildered. Wow, what's going on here? Wait, I created a cow with boys. I took them away. I took the cows away. I hid them. I come back. They're all there. How's it possible? Oh, now they're Vishnus. How's it possible? Now they disappeared. And then what's the message? What am I supposed to learn here? Bow down to Krishna. Like this all, you know, he couldn't do much else. Of course, it means different things for us at different times. But what am I meant to learn here? What is Krishna teaching me? Because ultimately it's a fact. We are just passing through here. We don't know how much time we have left. You know, it could be today. It could be next week. It could be a year from now. We could live to be 105. We could live 105 hours. We don't know. But how am I going to try to use that time for Krishna? And at every step, what am I meant to learn here? And how can I share what I know as best possible? And I think if we keep that in mind, just like Lord Brahma, he's completely bewildered and overwhelmed. But it's just, what am I meant to learn from this? I'm learning Krishna is the controller. I thought I'm such a big personality. I knew so much. All the demigods offer their respects to me. I have so many mystic powers. I create everything. I know everything. But I'm just a fool before you. I don't know anything. So that's the lesson. And it's so magnificent to see Krishna so kind. He raised this whole elaborate scheme. It's his play, but it's also, he plays in such a way to benefit his devotees. So the same way he's created this whole universe, we should think in one sense, when we see the sun in the morning, it's so beautiful, wonderful here in Chicago Temple, you see the sun every morning. You know, we should think the sun is Krishna's energy, it represents Krishna, it's his power. And at the same time, we see Krishna's created this sun just for us. You know what I mean? And the other trillions of living entities, but we're part of that. That's his kindness to us, to give us the opportunity to fulfill our desires, which hopefully are slowing down, and specifically to connect with him. Again, that verse, third chapter, ninth text, Bhagavad Gita. So, I'll stop there, see if there's some questions or comments anybody might have.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Anuttama Prabhu. My question is related to, you were mentioning, I'm not sure if you were referring to a wife or your wife, who says, when the husband says, I don't want to marry my daughter with the people in this neighborhood.
Yeah, it was that Christian minister.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then his wife criticized him, you're from this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, because she basically said, I saw the greatness within you, how come you can't see it in anyone else? And there's a nice quote that says,
I saw your potential.
Yeah, I saw your potential. That's what
you mentioned. I put aside any external artificial things and look to see what's in your heart. You need to do the same.
That reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. It says, surround yourself with the dreamers and the doers, the believers and the thinkers, but most of all, surround yourself with those who see the greatness within you, even when you don't see it with yourself. And so,
where's that from?
I don't always remember who quotes the...
You should, because those are really good. You always have these good quotes. You should write a book of quotes.
I speak in quotes. I know more quotes than verses, so I don't know too many verses by heart, but the quotes, they're pretty inspiring. And so we see that Lord Ramachandra, he even saw the greatness within the monkeys. So my question is that how can we not fall into the trap of Hiranyakashipu? Because Hiranyakashipu, so many people were honoring him. It may be like ungenuine honor, but sometimes there's so many people who see the greatness within you. You're great, you're honored. And then when one person doesn't see the greatness within us or criticizes us, we focus on that. So how can we not fall into that trap of focusing on, you know, the criticism and focusing on, you know, people who do see the greatness within us or whatever. So.
Well, you seem to come at two angles. You switched at the end. You sound like you were going to say, how do we not be carried away with the people that praise us?
Well, both, I guess.
Yeah. And then you said, but how do we see the positives? How do we accept the positives? Well, that's a great question. I heard a story recently. Prabhupada, at a Vyasa Puja ceremony, when he was physically present at the ceremony, and devotees were glorifying him, Srila Prabhupada, you've done so much, you've achieved this and that, so many things. And there were devotees sitting close to Prabhupada, and they could hear him under his breath, as expression goes, quietly. The devotee was saying, Prabhupada, you've done this and this, and Prabhupada was saying, you become. Next person, oh, Prabhupada, you translated so many books, and, you know, you become. Prabhupada, you traveled around the world, showing so much mercy, you become. So I think one part of it is if we do have some ability, we should always remember that it's coming from Krishna, and he can take it away at any moment, which he does from time to time just to show us. He gives you what you think is a reasonably nice class to speak on, and gives you 5 pages of notes, and then says, I don't think so. I think you're just going to have to, like, depend on me a little bit more. You know, little ways. He does things like that. So that's a big part of it. I mean, understanding that whatever we have, it comes from Krishna. I mean, our physical health. I had an issue. I've had back problems for years, and I had a thing. I was at the GBC meetings in Ujjain, and something really strange happened. Not even sure what, but it completely got messed up. The most painful situation I've ever been in my life. And I was thinking, you know, I could be paralyzed from this. If I have to deal with this pain for the rest of my life, I don't know how I could even if I got to live with this for 3 days, I don't know if I could live. And Krishna's grace, you know, took it away. But then you realize, wow, I'm not the big, tough, strong man, right? I'm a man, I'm strong, that I thought I was. I'm just, you know, the little whim of a muscle that pulls the wrong way, and I'm crippled. I'm in bed, you know, please, give me another shot, you know, etc. Or, you know, sometimes you try to remember something, and it's not there, right? I mean, look at Karna. What a classic story. I mean, he was cursed, but he has so much skills, but when the moment he needed it, it's not there. So who am I? Who am I? And, you know, so Krishna sends us these. So we have to be open to see those reminders. See, the materialistic mentality is so intent on I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, and if I just work hard, right, 16th chapter, I just work hard and perform some sacrifices and I use my power, I'm going to get everything I want because they're intent on that. The devotee, we're praying every day, Krishna, let me see you, right? Jagannatha Swami, Nayana Patagami, Baba Tume, please be visible to me. Let me see you in the world. So when we see that if we have some little skill or talent or strength or beautiful thing or beautiful ability, then we really have to remind ourselves it's coming from Krishna and he can take away at any moment. And if there's some shortcoming there, he can make up for it. He carries what we lack and preserves what we have. So just remembering that. And it's not easy to remember because material consciousness makes us want to forget it. But then he shows us, you know, we stumble again and he reminds us. He's very good at reminders. I mean, just stub your toe a couple times, you know. Materialistic person, they stub their toes, like, oh, that stupid step. And for us, like, okay, thank you, Krishna. This world is a dangerous place at any moment. I mean, just go downtown, you're standing waiting for, like, the Uber, right? And buses drive by, they're like, that's a good way of telling people. That's a good system, Rajaji. I commend you on that. But, you know, just it happens sometimes. The guy behind you pushes you, you're dead. You're squished. I mean, you know, our existence here is very, very, very shaky. I think I heard the statistic when I was in India last time. I think it's 100,000 people a year in India die in car accidents and automobile accidents. America's only 30,000. That's a lot of people. He's driving to work. It's finished. Time's up. You know, or hurricanes come, or, you know, it's like, so we have to use our time carefully and see that all the good things are coming from Krishna. And ultimately, the difficult things are also coming from Krishna. So what are we supposed to learn? Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Through your class, just the quality of seeing Krishna in our lives, and
we have to try.
One of the things that that you know, trying to see how Krishna is acting in our lives and what lessons we have to learn. We see that sometimes conditioning of thinking in certain ways kicks in, and sweeps the mind for several days in a row before it, you know, goes back to, yeah, this actually Krishna is in control. He's creating this scene for me. That's it's for me. Could you speak something along the lines of strengthening that ability to not get swept by our previous ways of thinking of things?
Well, Prabhupada describes it's an awakening process. So that it's right. It's our core philosophy is we are originally Krishna conscious entities, quote unquote. So the human form of life is meant to be a process of purification and yoga, connecting. Right? We teach yoga. The purpose is to reconnect with Krishna. So our acharyas advocate that we should Krishnaize our lives. So for ourselves and for others, just reminding people as much as possible, you know, take the next step towards Krishna. Somebody comes to the temple and we encourage them, well, here, take this calendar home and hang it up. They've got a picture of Krishna in their home. And many of us remember, like, the first time we started doing that, you know, like, I remember carrying a mantra card in my wallet for years. And every once in a while, I take it out. Not very often. Every once in a while, it was that reminder. And sometimes it was like a real little bit of a transcendental experience. So just, right, the analogies are there, keeping the iron rod in the fire. If we just keep ourselves in that connection with Krishna, endeavor to associate with devotees as much as possible and hear as much as possible and serve as much as possible and Krishnaize our homes as much as possible. And then there was a special take on your question, though. How do we particularly keep in touch with what else? See Krishna, but what else was it?
To not allow the tendencies to kick in, or the you know, the conditioned ways of thinking.
We really can't not allow. That's our past karma, that's our conditioning. I walk on the street, and you hear a noise that it reminds you of, oh yeah, when I was 7 years old. Or like you see something else, oh, I wanted one of those when I was younger. Oh, there's, oh, I wish I had one of those, etc. But the process is, again, chanting is so wonderful because it's kind of a formula for the day. Bring the mind back to Krishna, bring the mind back to. So it goes, we bring it back. It goes, we bring it back. It goes, we bring it back. And slowly, slowly becomes a little more natural. Slowly. So it's not so much that we can prevent it. We gradually prevent it by hearing the philosophy, by studying, by practicing, by eating, you know, sattvic foods nicely offered to Krishna. We slowly, slowly, those things kind of quiet down. I was thinking about the other day, probably gives the example of the pond. I went to a camp when I was a kid, and they had a swamp out back. And if you signed up for nature class, they'd go and study the swamp. I didn't really like the swamp because I saw something called the creature from the Black Lagoon when I was a child. So this weird fishy guy comes out of the swamps. I didn't like swamps. But, you know, and they go and like look for tadpoles. But you look at the swamp, and every once in a while, there's some like gross thing would come up from the bottom. Loop. Because there's all this dirt. But Prabhupada gives an example. If you let the water settle, then it's very pure on the top, and all the dirty stuff is down below. But every once in a while, some of those pop up. We just have to let it settle down. And don't be discouraged. And this is part of the challenge, is don't be discouraged, because we may think, how am I ever going to get out of here? It's just my desires are too deep. You know, my fences are too great. My nonsense mentality is too, it's just too dirty. But no, Krishna's God. You know, Lord Chaitanya came specifically, you know, we hear those things. It's a fact. He came specifically to save us. So by his power, we may think it's impossible for me. It is impossible for me. But by Prabhupada's grace, Guru's grace, Mahaprabhu's grace, Krishna's grace, we can be delivered. We are being delivered. So, you know, we have to endeavor, but he's the deliverer. So we endeavor to try to show him that we're, to be in earnest, to take advantage of the process that's there. But ultimately, it's up to Krishna. And that's why we hear about Krishna. He's our best friend. I mean, why is he standing there? You know, it's explained so many. I mean, he's dressed very beautifully, but, you know, he doesn't really need flowers. He's got parijata flowers and whatever else is there. These are going to, like, within 2 days, those flowers are going to smell so bad, we're going to throw them out. You know, but he's accepting that. Prabhupada says, because of the devotion there, that's his kindness. So it's because of him we have hope. And he said we're part and parcel of him. You know, we may think, oh, my heart's so dark. No, it's not. It's pure. Bhagavad Gita says like the sun. The soul is the power of the sun. That's us. But we're just covered. So some days, you know, I remember hearing the analogy many times in the past. You go in to clean a room or something. And if you're going to do a really good job, you pull the couch out, you roll up the rugs, and all of a sudden you see this place is filthy. And previously you didn't realize how dirty it was. So when you start the cleaning process, part of that process is you go, oh my gosh, look what's over there in the corner. I didn't know that was there. So we have to be intelligent, think this is not discouraging that that's there. It's a little discouraging. But it's part of the process. Okay, wow. Thank you, Krishna, for revealing yet another place I need to clean. You know, but at the same time, you know, relishing Krishna Prasadam and relishing Kirtan and relishing association with devotees and relishing going outside and seeing the sun and knowing that's Krishna's mercy, and so that we don't put so much pressure on ourselves that we become discouraged, lose our enthusiasm. Okay, so we'll stop there. Okay, thank you very much. Program today is at 4. Mangi Majini? 5 to 8. 5 to 8, okay. And it's fasting until noon? Is it lunch actually at noon or? Okay. So lunch at 1 o'clock for, okay. So like lunch, and then the feast is tonight. Okay, great. Jai. Shri Lord Ramchandra ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.